Welcome to Raw the Podcast with Emma and Amy, where we talk real and raw with mamas who have had to fight and be fierce, who have been thrown curveballs and faced adversity.
We discuss everything from premature birth and NICU life to special needs and infant loss. Nothing is off topic. We hope that by opening up and being vulnerable, we can break down the walls and start to remove some of the shame and stigma associated with these traumatic experiences while helping other mamas feel less alone.
I'm Emma, a rural living mum to two preemie and medically complex girls, Hazel Earthside and our warrior Willow up in the stars.
And I'm Amy, special needs and medical mama to preemie boys James and Jack, and a fierce advocate for the preemie and special needs community.
We don't share your average mama stories, and this isn't your average podcast. Raw is unrefined and breaks through the bullshit of navigating guilt, grief and trauma. I mean, let's be honest, we've been through more shit than some could ever imagine. So at this point, we don't really have a filter. But with this being said, please note, we do talk about sensitive topics in our episodes, which we know can be distressing. We give this warning simply to empower you, our audience, with the knowledge you need to make healthy decisions about how and if you should consume this podcast content. Please take care of yourselves and don't hesitate to ask for help if you need it.
And lastly, let us assure you that it's not all bad and sad. Above all, we hope to shine a light on the life-changing perspective and appreciation that only these experiences can give you. We share the overwhelming joys and triumphs that our little miracles, both here and in heaven, bring to our lives, and we discuss the inspiration and hope we have gained from this community. While our experiences are individually unique, we are forever a part of something truly special. A community of fierce mama bears and their cubs navigating the storm, and together we'll roar. Welcome back, Roarers, to part two of my chat with my wonderful husband, Scott. Hi, Scott.
Hello.
So we had a lot of beautiful feedback from last week's episode. People really loved hearing the dad's or a male perspective and said it was really valuable. So thank you, Scott. They all thought you were very brave.
Thank you.
After the last episode, I actually asked you all to share your funny stories or moments on my Miracle Mama Instagram stories about, yeah, those NICU moments that just stuck out in your mind. And I just wanted to share some here, as I know you guys will get a bit of a laugh out of this. So there are a lot of poop-related stories. Seriously, how can such tiny babies poop so much? So someone's little baby sprayed the isolate with poo, and she said it was a guaranteed transition to an open cot after days of advocating, which I thought was really funny. Yeah. Best way to get them into an open cot?
Yeah, we'll do it.
There were also heaps of hubby and partner-related funny stories, which was pretty cool because it was really obvious that people's partners are good at bringing the laughs and some fun through the hard times. So, for instance, someone's hubby used a nipple shield as a fake nose. Another husband even used a breast pump on themselves. I think in those moments, having little things like that that make you smile is, and that's funny that that's what stuck out in people's minds, yeah. Which is nice.
Yep. Yeah.
There were lots of talk about having boobs out for all to see. I was one of those people. I remember constantly sitting there. You put your privacy screen up around you to, you know, as a bit of a hint. Mm. And people, everyone just walks in, yeah. Everyone walks in and you just boob out and you're like,
stop them.
Yep, hi, cool. you get used to it. I didn't even cover up in the end. Yeah. Lots of breast milk spillage stories, which I guess are funny in hindsight, but I think I would have cried a river if someone had spilt my milk.
Yeah.
even though I had so much of it, I was still.
It's very precious.
Very precious, yeah. And I was actually surprised to see that 57% of people's partners had tasted their breast milk. Scott was very much
I'm in the other.
Big
in the no side, that's for sure. Wasn't keen.
Someone said that the nurse bopped her daughter's head on the isolate perspex as she was getting her out. I can just imagine being a nurse, I can imagine doing this myself, something I would do.
And going, what did they notice?
Going, oh shit, sorry. Like I do when I hit Jack's head on the car door on the way into his car seat.
Yeah.
And you almost look around like, did anyone see that? But the winner had to be the mum who mentioned the midwife that felt comfortable enough to fart near her. I was laughing out loud at this, lying in bed. It was nearly midnight, I reckon, cacking myself at these stories. The funniest thing about that story was that reckon half of Adelaide mums that had been in NICU here knew who this person was talking about, who this midwife was. So that was really funny.
Yeah.
So, yeah, this week we're talking with Scott about special needs parenting. So we delved quite deep into the ins and outs of this in episode 4. So this episode I wanted to aim more at your perspective and your insights, Scott, as a dad or as a partner who does tend to have to take on, I guess, a little bit of a back role with this sort of stuff and has to go to work and support, financially support the family, I guess. So I do feel like the medical and special needs stuff tends to fall on one parent. Well, it has to, really. Not putting anyone into a box here, but it's generally the mums who manage all of this, so the appointments, therapies, NDIS, because generally the dad is working. Yeah, let's get into it.
Okay, no worries.
So we'll start right at the beginning. I've talked a lot with mums actually about that initial diagnosis and the anxiety and the fear and the worry that comes with that. But how did you feel when we received the diagnosis of severe dysphagia for Jack and when his feeding tube was put in?
I reckon it was just a bit of unknown, I think. I wasn't sure what to expect, what it meant really, how it was going to affect our life, I guess. You know, I thought, you know, whatever was going to be thrown at us would handle it.
Yeah,
but it was just mainly the unknown of it.
And we didn't, at that stage, we had no idea how long.
Yeah, so.
It was going to last.
Yeah, you never think in that sort of, when you get something like that, that it's going to be a long-term thing, I guess. You go, oh, yeah, I guess Jack will grow out of it and won't be here for long. We might have to deal with it for a year or half a year and then he'll be eating solid foods and we'll be fine.
Yeah. And yeah, I guess with Jack, I want to say right up early that I guess we're lucky that a lot of his conditions and diagnoses they are short term and he will essentially grow out of them. I'm not, you know, downplaying what we go through or anything, but I also want to acknowledge that a lot of people, especially in our community, have a diagnosis that is lifelong.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
And that there's a lot more fear for their future and, yeah, the long term of all of that. And especially I know a lot of mums who have grieved sort of the loss of what they had hoped for their child. I mean, did you feel this in a way that you were grieving a little bit of what Jack could have and should have been doing at that time? Obviously giving up breastfeeding for me, I was grieving that.
I don't think so. Yeah, I know it was going to be. I know it was very hard for you at the time with the schedule that they'd given us, and obviously not being able to breastfeed, and thinking how are we going to do this and get all this in one day and still live our life. But in regards to when he was only 6 months old, I just thought it was just going to be the way he was going to do things. So I guess I didn't think of it as in the long-term sense at all.
I think men in general seem to be a little bit more like they don't dwell on things like we do as women or as mums. Again, I don't want to put anyone into or generalise at all, but you tend to get on with it, focus on the now. You're a bit better at just moving forward. And
yeah, I think so. I just thought, you know, this is what's happening. So we'll just do it. You don't have a choice. Just get it done and make the best of it.
So did you ever feel anxiety about what other people might think? Like, obviously, initially Jack's diagnosis was on his face. Like, he had his nasogastric tube in, and we obviously got a few looks in public.
No, not. Well, I guess with my family and friends, I was. And I was more than happy to talk about it. I think even speaking about it was helping me understand a bit more about it, trying to explain it to them, I found.
Yeah.
You know, I guess in regards to, and with, you know, friends and family, they were 100% supportive. They didn't make you feel awkward or, you know, what's wrong with him, blah, blah, blah. They just said, oh, they were the same. He'll get through this. It's all fine. It's just a hurdle for him to get over.
Yeah.
With public, I didn't really, you know, people did look at him a bit differently, but I honestly didn't care what people thought, really. You know, if they wanted to talk about it, I was happy to talk to them about it.
Yeah, and we were almost encouraging of people to come and ask questions. Mm. It didn't stop us from living our life, and I think that that's something we've done quite well.
Yeah.
From the start.
Yeah, you prefer someone to come up to you and ask, you know, can I ask you why? What that is? What's it for? And then just sitting there and
ogling.
Yeah, looking and
making Jack and everyone, James, feel uncomfortable.
Hmm.
And that's something we sort of taught James from the start as well, was, you know, that Jack wasn't any different. So we don't treat him any differently, but we just do stuff differently. I remember you saying that, and I thought that was a really cool way to put it.
Yeah.
Yeah. That, you know, that helped James to normalize everything that was going on. And I think the fact that we went in a camper van, did an 8-week road trip just a few weeks after Jack got the tube put in, it just shows that we didn't want it to let us.
Didn't want to stop us, for sure.
Yeah, let it stop us.
Yeah, we're going to change our life. And
I kind of think that we wanted other people to be the same.
Hmm.
You know, like I think a lot of people look at a kid like Jack and feel a bit of pity, or you know, they don't know what to say, or they feel sorry for you. But we were always, you know, of the mindset, don't treat him any differently. Don't feel pity for him, you know, treat him like you would any other kid.
Yeah, we almost went the other way a bit with James. I feel like, how cool is Jack? He can, you know, he can run around and have his drink of water at the same time, and
through his tube
and
yeah.
You know, it's his little special thing he's got, and we'd like to almost show it off a bit sometimes.
And then you'd see that in Jack as well. So if he heard the word Billy, you know, he understood what that meant even when he was younger. And he'd lift up his shirt and he'd run around and
big smile on his face.
Yeah, show everyone his Billy like it was his little superhero cape.
Yeah, definitely.
And then the other big diagnosis we received for Jack was the bronchiectasis, which was his lung damage. He was quite young when we received that diagnosis. He was about, I think he was about 14 months old. And at this stage, he was probably the sickest he's been. So he was really struggling with a chronic wet cough. He could hardly walk from one room to the other without, you know, changing colour or puffing. And I think this is that diagnosis sort of impacted on us a bit more, because we were told it could be permanent and lifelong, and we've really got no understanding of how that will affect him in the future. So what was that time like for you?
Yeah, I guess that one, that was a bit more worrying, I think. Just the unknown of, you know, how it will affect his life as he's growing up, or when he gets older, you know, when he's playing with other kids, or when he's old enough to play sports, will he be able to run around and do what all the other kids are doing. It's definitely a worry in the back of my mind, but, you know, at the same time, I always thought he would be able to, if it does affect him. He's a very tough little kid, and I can almost picture him running around with the other kids, battling away, but not letting it stop him. So
yeah, pushing through it.
Yeah.
Sort of like what James does now with his asthma.
Yeah, that's right. James will...
Even Jack now, like if he's coughing and spluttering away, he just tends to just push through and hasn't stopped him yet. I mean, he is sort of that little bit more breathless and than most kids his age. But I think the big thing with this, the tube feeding was more of a logistical nightmare, and it was harder in terms of managing time and fitting that into your day. But with his chest, I worry more, especially with his airway anomalies and how they don't really know how that will impact him long term. I think I worry more about that for his future than anything else.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. Because we have been given sort of like he'll grow out of the swallowing issues. That's what we've been told. So, but he's likely to not grow out of the lung issues, so
yeah, that's right.
All right, and then I want to touch on the busyness of all of this, the schedule, like you said, how hectic our lives are. So our calendar is just super full. This is one part of special needs parenting that I don't think people truly comprehend if they haven't lived it. It's a busy you can't describe. Like, I didn't know busy until we had Jack. So we've got a mix of medical and therapy appointments. We have about 4 therapies we attend fortnightly. Then we see about 6 different medical teams with extras on top of that, like dietitian, pediatrician, general GP appointments. We're even going to see a new sort of OT that specializes in medical trauma and psych side of things as well soon. So it makes me laugh a little bit when people say they're busy because they have to fit in a dentist appointment this week on top of like sports and work. It's all relative.
Yeah.
And I don't ever say anything. I just have a little chuckle to myself because, yeah.
Well, that's right. Like, being a parent or life for a lot of people is busy. But it's like you said, it's all relative to what they're used to. Like going from not having kids to kids, it's all of a sudden you're very busy.
Yeah.
But then, chuck on top everything that we get piled into our weeks and you go, we're flat out. When you see that calendar and it's just 4 or 5 things on each day.
Yeah.
Plus work and, it's definitely full on.
And then you add in things like, that's not even counting things like tube feeding that we have to do each day.
Yep.
Anytime you head out to any of these appointments, you have to
think
about all the things to bring. Yeah, and doing it in between school pickup and drop off. Mm. And, I think my biggest thing is trying to, I feel a lot of guilt with not fitting in sort of some one-on-one time with Jack to just play. Like, that's one thing I feel really guilty about. With James, I had no other commitments really. I could take him to kinder gym. I could sit on the floor with him for a good couple hours a day and play. He had a busy social life. I obviously didn't have another older sibling to worry about, but we just didn't have any other appointments and stuff. And I look back on that and I think, gosh, that was easy.
Yeah, that's right, isn't it?
All right, so let's talk about the medical side of things. As you know, I think this is the hardest part. I find this is literally the pits, the medical appointments I'm talking about. So I always walk into these appointments and I have a list of questions in my mind. I know what I want to ask. Sometimes I even write them down to make sure I don't forget, but I always walk out feeling like I haven't got anywhere.
Mm.
A waste of time.
You got Jack running amok in there as well if I'm not there or...
Yeah. Driving, 45 minutes each way just to get to these appointments. I hate them.
Yeah.
So you've sort of seen the impact that this has on me, especially the advocating and the fighting, especially in those early days, trying to constantly monitor his symptoms and then report them to the doctors who you see for 20 minutes. And the monitoring that I sort of do of Jack at home, how does that impact on you? How do you sort of try and support me? And I guess being so involved with Jack on a day-to-day basis, but then sort of being separated from that medical side at times.
Yeah, definitely. It's like I said, it's all these appointments, just the way things are. They're always scheduled during the week when I'm at work. It is it's hard not being there to help out, I guess. These appointments, you've got a lot to cover. You're trying to cover a lot of things and you're doing it with Jack jumping off tables and it's not only that, just having another person to remember to ask something.
Mm.
It's something as simple as having someone there who can distract Jack enough for the other person to
concentrate
on what we're doing there. So
but
you've always been the medical one.
Mm-hmm. And also me having a medical background, I think
I lean on you a lot in regards to that sort of things and Jack's medical health and rely on your opinion. I guess that also means a lot of the decisions come down on you, though, which can be hard. But it's also, if we are together, if those odd occasions where I do get to come in, we can go in there and have a plan. We've had a little chat about what we want to try to get out of it beforehand normally.
Yeah.
And then if one of us doesn't remember, the other will, I find.
Yeah. Or if one, if we feel like we don't have, we're not sort of, the question's not getting answered, I find even you just rewording it in a different way.
You know, sometimes it seems to feel like if it has to be asked twice before they actually think
properly
about
answer.
Answering it.
And you're good at trying to get to appointments, and you always ring me immediately after, you know, that an appointment's finished. You'll ring me and ask for an update, and you're heavily involved as much as you can be. And
yeah, definitely. And it's, but it's amazing how often after appointments, you know, if we get off the phone call and you sit there and you go, oh, I wish we could have asked this, or you go through your head of how you would have asked it differently. And
And I do that after every appointment. I walk out, and half an hour later, all this stuff comes to you.
All the other stuff you wanted to ask, or all the follow up questions that you don't think of at the time.
So that's, I find it really frustrating. And then there's in between those appointments, there's no sort of follow up or communication. You've got that one chance, and then
you've got to remember that, and then as well on remember that you've got to ask that next time, as well as all the other stuff that
pops up in the meantime.
You do a next appointment. Yeah, so it's very hard. And it's very hard for you to do it by yourself.
Yeah, and then the therapies, on the other hand, I kind of enjoy these. I know they're a lot more relentless in that they're more frequent. So
So
it's a lot to add into your schedule, but I just find that they're kind of a bit more fun, and they're more play-based, and it kind of forces me to stop and sit down and spend that one-on-one time with Jack, obviously with the therapist, but we because of how busy we are, that just
doesn't happen as much as you want.
Yeah, it doesn't happen as at home.
Yeah.
It takes a little bit of that guilt away that I feel of not being able to sit and play with him. And he loves them. He enjoys them. They're fun for him. And you can see progress. You're working towards goals. I learn a lot and can bring that into home, and sort of I just feel a lot more involved in that process, I think.
Yeah.
And the therapists are like your friends, and I feel way more comfortable
talking
to them. I don't feel like I can go in there, tell them exactly the same stuff that I'd probably tell a medical professional, but just feel so much more at ease and never feel judged or that I'm, you know.
Yeah. I swear, I feel like the reason for that would be just because they build a relationship with Jack.
Yeah.
They build this little,
almost like a bond with him and
with Jack, and then it's a lot easier to talk, and you're not just focused on him the whole time. You can talk while they're doing the therapies with him, and I can imagine how much easier it is.
And you've got an hour, so if you don't think of something, like, you always catch up in the first few minutes, and then if you don't get something out, then you've got an hour. Like so many times during a session, I'm like, oh, this is what else has happened, and then we'll talk through that. And I feel more comfortable, and I get anxious and nervous with doctors for some reason. And it's weird because I'm a health professional, and I talk to doctors in my work job as if they're like friends.
Yep.
And I don't have any anxieties about going up to a doctor at work and advocating for a patient. But when it's your own, I don't know, it's bizarre, isn't it? And I know so many mums are the same. And even though we've had the same professionals for so long, and I've loved them and I've got a relationship with them, I still feel like I hold back sometimes.
Yeah.
And I think that's why I like you coming, because I don't think you have that as much as I do, and you don't tend to hold back as much as I do.
Maybe. Yeah, I just,
you're a lot more level-headed, whereas I second-guess myself and I'm like, oh, are they going to judge me for saying this? Or are they going to think I'm stupid for saying this? Whereas you're just like, meh.
I just say whatever.
All right, so talking about how busy we are and the relentlessness of it all, and it's ongoing. It's been constant for us for nearly 3 years now. Have you struggled with this part of it, of sort of having very rare moments of free time and not being able to be spontaneous at all? Like, I guess we were able to be even just with James.
Yeah, definitely. It's definitely a struggle. The day in, day out chores of it all, when you're going to work as a full-time job, coming home, saying hello quickly, and then straight into, you know, you have your teas, you have his tube feed, you sit down with him, and then you're on to straight away cleaning the dishes, cleaning the house up, getting prepped for the next day. It's very hard to
yeah,
to find time just to go do something fun, you know, go for a kick of the footy after work or go for a bike ride.
Yeah, all the little stuff that, yeah. I think that's where we struggle a lot to fit in all those, even just the social, little social stuff that we did with James, little play dates, and we really struggle to find time, and it's purely a time thing.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not that we don't do anything with the boys. Like you said, we've got a pretty packed life. Every weekend we're at, you know, our footy.
Yeah.
You're my footy, and but it's just nothing's as spontaneous. Like you said, going to the playground.
It's all booked in.
Everything's very pre-planned. And I think, like you've said in the past, that you feel a little bit for James as well, like that he misses out on a little bit of stuff.
Yeah, definitely. He's.
I mean, he doesn't miss out because he has such a busy, happy life, but.
You know, we don't do as much of that stuff that I'd like to do. It's exhausting as well on the other side of it.
Yeah.
You know, you've got to find the.
The balance.
The balance and the. Not only do you not have the time, but half the time you don't have the energy either.
Yeah, and like I struggle with this with therapies. Like I think I say how therapies are his, that's my sort of forced time to sit down with Jack and like have that fun with him. And I always think, if we didn't have the therapies and stuff, like I'd have the time to do that anyway.
Yeah.
But in reality, we have to do the therapies. Yeah. And it's the same with my mum taking Jack. For a day each week, like I feel guilty going, I could be spending that day with Jack and doing that stuff, but then I would.
Yeah, then you just get burned out.
Yeah, then I don't cope. Yeah. And it is trying to find that balance, and our boys are so happy to play together and independently as well. So when we are, you know, having to cook dinner and stuff, we're lucky that they.
Yeah, they'll do that for
sure. They'll do that. James, this weekend we finally both had a weekend off footy, and I was like, all right, let's go do something fun, because I think that's the thing I keep saying, I feel like we don't have enough fun, like just laughing and just being in the moment. And he goes no, I want to stay home and play with my cars. So like he doesn't feel it, not at all. And he's such a he's happy to just stay at home and play with his cars. Like he had 3 days off school this week, literally hasn't left the house. And then when we're like, come on, let's go do something, he wants to stay home.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think we're always so hard on ourselves, but in reality, the kids aren't affected, are they?
No.
And then I guess the other thing is every Tuesday, our depression, day of depression, we call it, with Jack has his immunoglobulin infusions every Tuesday afternoon. So talk us through sort of your Tuesdays. Yeah. I know it's a lot.
Yeah, Tuesdays are the most hated day of the week by far.
Yeah.
You know, so I go to work, we get home, and straight into it, we got to start focusing on getting him ready to have his needles.
Yeah, there's no downtime. His numbing cream's on.
Yeah, walk through the door, numbing cream.
And it takes a lot. Like it has a mental toll on your whole day. I feel like you know it's coming.
Yeah.
And it's quite a trauma for all of us, not just Jack.
Definitely. You think about it the whole day. You almost think about it leaving up to it. You know, tomorrow's bloody Tuesday again.
Yeah. And knowing like he's pretty lucky in terms of his medical trauma that he's resilient and he'll happily run and sit and help you put his numbing cream on. But then the second you say that it's time for the needles, that's it. And there's no getting him out of that.
He's running and hiding and
crying
and doing everything he can to stop it from happening.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's a very draining day, definitely Tuesdays.
Yeah. It's funny as soon as we finish, we take the needles out, we kind of, go, oh, that's done for a week.
Yeah, it's almost like, 7 days don't have to do that again.
You don't have to think about it for at least another 5 days until that sort of starts dread comes back in. But but that's sort of like the mental toll that all of this has on you. Like that's the other thing that people I don't think can comprehend is, like it's you never can sort of escape from that.
No.
And especially with something like that, that's a weekly awful event. You do kind of, you get that done and out of the way, but it quickly comes back around again.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. And no matter how much, like, he's getting older now and I think he can understand it a little bit more, but he still can't understand that why we're doing it.
Yeah. Yeah, he knows it's coming, knows what's involved, but doesn't know what it's doing for him, I guess, does he? Can't comprehend that.
Yeah, so I don't think it ever gets easier no matter how old they get. And even when they can understand it, it's still it still hurts.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's right. And I still don't want it.
Yeah. And then the last thing in that's thrust on you is hospital admissions. So when he gets sick, we end up being admitted. And that's just another bloody stuffs up our routine completely. Yeah. So how do you feel sort of being the one that's at home during these admissions? I know generally, again, the fathers are the ones that sort of stay home with the older kids, or sort of they have to, again, because they have to work and support, sort of hold down the household. How do you feel being separated in those instances?
Yeah, I find it pretty hard, definitely. It's, you just feel like you can't do anything, I guess. It's, you know, we video call a lot, and it's only so much you can do over the phone to try to cheer him up. I guess that's probably one of the hardest parts, is I can't cheer him up and make him smile.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You generally take some time off of work, though. Like, you're really good. Most of the time you kind of have to, because you have to get James to and from school, or you have to get James to someone to look after him. So you do end up normally having to take one or two days off work if we have an admission, and you'll come down to the hospital.
Yeah, every chance I can.
Every chance you can.
Yeah, if we can somehow
manage it,
then I can get in there. I wouldn't want to be anywhere else.
And you're really good at cheering him up, like you said. So that's where I kind of lean on you then, because it's so draining in hospital and trying to find stuff with such limited resources to make him happy.
Yeah.
So that's a big pressure off my mind when you do come for a day in.
Yeah, that's right. Gives you a break. I guess, like I said, it's draining in there, so it's hard for you to cheer him up in a situation, in a place like that. You've got to be super excited and you know, over the top almost to get a smile out of him. And trying to do that all the time in hospital is almost impossible. So,
Lack of sleep.
Lack of sleep, yeah.
Yeah.
So if I can come, you know, I try to get in there as much as I can to try to do that, and then give you a chance to recharge as well, because otherwise it'd be impossible almost, I think. It'd be very hard.
And I want to touch on, in saying that, I want to touch on sort of the medical procedures as well, so the bloods and all of that stuff. That also tends to fall on me, being the one that's there in those initial stages. How do you feel personally as a father when Jack goes through that medical trauma?
It's horrible, absolutely horrible. I got distinct memories of, you know, some horrible times where he was in there. I know a lot of it stems from blood tests, so this memory does, where he had to get a routine blood test, and it's just been a nightmare. I think they'd had three shots, or
This was going to be the third shot. We'd already had two unsuccessful shots.
Twice, I know you were.
On two separate occasions. Like, that's not just two stabs, I'm talking multiple stabs on separate occasions. And this was, the next step was an anaesthetist in theatre.
And you had said, I just can't do it again, because you'd been there for those prior to.
I just didn't want to hold him down and be the bad guy again. Because you feel like the bad guy.
And he looks, you know, he's looking at you and he's asking you what's going on. You can see in his eyes, he's saying, what's going on? Why is this happening? I still remember that's painted on my memory, that one. That's going to be there forever, I think. This, his eyes and his face and how stressed everyone was. It wasn't just him. It was, you know, I'm holding him down, the nurses and the anaesthetists are trying to do it, and they're stressing out like you wouldn't believe. You could see it in their faces. And
And that's the thing, like, when they're missing, when they're missing, when it's not successful. And I just, so many times I've been holding him down.
Your heart sinks.
And your heart just sinks.
Another failed, and then you
and you try and rev yourself up.
Try and prepare for the next one.
Yeah. And doing that over and over again. And I don't know how many times we've done that over and over again. And then, yeah, that day, that's when they hit an artery that day.
Yep.
So they finally got the blood because they hit an artery.
Yeah. It's exhausting.
And you can just see in Jack's face, like his exhaustion, like the big puffy red eyes and
sweating.
It's just, yeah.
Yeah, it's very hard on everyone, I think.
Yeah. All right, so you obviously never saw yourself as the dad of a medically complex child. Would you change anything?
No, I don't think so. No. I'd love for Jack not to have gone through what he's gone through. And you know, no one wants to see their kid in pain like that. But, you know, in saying that, it's also made him the little kid he is. I guess Jack's little quirks have made him what he is today and how tough he is today and how fun he is, I think.
Yeah. He wouldn't be who he is today if he...
No, no. It's allowed James to turn into little compassionate little fella is as well, I think.
Yeah.
And the relationship they have together, it almost, you know, would it be like that if it wasn't for the... For what he's been through, and yeah,
and it changes. It's changed us. It's changed our perspective on life.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Like you said, and it hasn't stopped him. And
no,
he wouldn't be Jack if it wasn't. I know. If this wasn't his. This is his story, and even his all of his stuff, like his sensory stuff and his speech and all those things, they just make up who he is.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Like. Yeah, I just sit here and I smile thinking about all of that stuff and I can't imagine it not being that way.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, sometimes it's frustrating but sometimes you laugh at him about it.
Yeah.
You can't help it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he surprises you, mate. It's funny, like he surprises you other times. He doesn't want anything in his head and all of a sudden he's getting angry that he can't put his hoodie on. And he's going, yeah. Have a laugh about it.
Yeah. And like the little things that he can't have his pant ties hanging out. They have to be tucked in.
Yeah.
And if there's even a little bit of a little thread hanging off of his sock, he has to have it cut off.
Get it
and
off.
He's just so needs to do everything his own way.
Yeah.
So much need for control.
Yeah.
Which is my biggest struggle with him.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
With all this, how busy we are and having to get to 100 different appointments when he wants to take 20 minutes to get himself in his car seat. It's not.
That's lovely, isn't it?
But you can't push him because it just makes it worse.
Yeah. He'll go, no, I'll do it my way. Take as long as it takes.
All these things that just wouldn't be the way they are if.
Yeah. Yeah.
If this wasn't.
This was different.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And how has this, all of this that we've been through, not just over the past sort of few years, but. All of it, it's from the beginning. How has it changed your perspective on life, I guess?
Yeah, well, just from the get-go, becoming a father just completely changed how I viewed life, I guess. You know, I remember when James was born and thinking, what was I doing? What was the point of it beforehand almost?
Yeah.
And it's also just, you know, in regards to Jack and all his medical side of things, I think it's sort of just taught us to not worry about the little things as much as we can.
Yeah.
In the long run, it's not going to make much of a difference.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a massive thing that he's taught me.
All right. Lastly, I want to touch on sort of having more children. So. I wanted to see a reaction with this, but it was really boring. So obviously we've been told pretty much not to have any more children, too high risk. And I wouldn't say that we disagree on this because we both agree that that's for the best and we both understand that that's the way it is and I'm certainly at peace with it. But I think I would still... how do I say this? I think despite all of that, despite everything we've gone through and the fact that it would be high risk and it'd be very stressful, I would probably have given it another go. But you're definitely at the no way, nope.
Yeah.
There is no way I would do that again.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just, I don't know.
Like, this isn't a conversation of if we're having another baby. Like, yeah, we're done. Yeah. We know that.
Yeah.
But I think we're a little bit different in I probably would have gone again, and you completely no.
Yeah. Yeah, just the memory of the whole, the whole 8 years it's been, I reckon, since.
Yeah, well, with starting.
Started eight years ago, and how hard it all was, and
yeah,
you know.
Nothing before, was easy.
Yeah, nothing was easy. And it wasn't just the fact that getting pregnant was hard. It was, pregnancy was never, was horrible.
Never easy.
The pregnancy itself was never really.
Well, James's, I think, yeah, it was James's quite never easy.
James's was all right until about the 20 week scan or something, whenever it was. And then it was a nightmare and from
Jack's
there.
Jack's was just horrific.
Yeah, it's just, you know, there wasn't any, there was never a time where you weren't stressed, I guess. And I think we got, I mean, the other thing, I think we got really lucky
with Jack,
with both of them.
Oh yeah, well yeah, it could have, James especially could have ended very differently.
Yeah,
there were so many things that just happened
that needed to happen.
Yeah. Literally saved his life. Multiple. Like, how, like, looking back, we've said it so often. I think Jack, we were, this is my argument. Jack, like, when you know what you're dealing with and you put the right people in place and the right plans in place, you can, but even then we were throwing curveballs. Yeah. Like, the preeclampsia was not, even my cervix.
I feel like we dodged so many bullets and we got so lucky.
Let's not push our luck.
Pretty much. You can't be that lucky forever.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's where I sort of feel with it a bit.
Yeah. And I get that completely. Maybe you need to go and have the snip then.
Maybe.
So in saying that, do you think if it had been easier, if we had pretty stress-free, easy pregnancies, would you have gone for a third or still no?
Oh, I would have definitely thought about it. I like two kids. Yeah. I'm pretty happy with two kids, but it would have been a conversation to have where I would have been very open-minded about it.
And if it was something that I really...
Yeah. And if you wanted, it would most likely would have happened for sure.
But yeah,
because I know you wanted a...
Oh, if we could have guaranteed a girl. Yeah, that's a different story again. But that's, we would have had a boy probably, if we went again.
Yeah.
Which would have been fine and we would have loved him too.
Oh, definitely.
But I'm like, I'm completely, I don't want anyone to think that I'm not completely happy with my, and even now that we've had this conversation, I'm sitting here going, there's no way I could do all of this again.
You look back and think about it.
Yeah. And in terms of, like, we're just, like, we're still not where we need to be with Jack. Like, I don't think we couldn't fit it in right now. Like, if that was on the tables, I would be sitting here going, no, like, we're not doing that now.
Yeah.
And then give it a year or two when Jack's less high needs, I'll probably be like, no, I'm getting my freedom back now. They're both in school.
Yeah. It's your turn.
Yep. So I just want to finish by saying that as someone who has now witnessed a special needs dad firsthand, you melt my heart. Just seeing you with Jack and James, of course, the way you are with both of them, it just, yeah, I think you were always going to be an amazing father. Like you said, that it's like something clicked in you when you became a dad, and that's your life, that's your purpose. But what we've been through over the past few years, just seeing the way you comfort Jack and the way that you make James laugh, it just, yeah, melts me. You give 110% of yourself, not just to Jack but to all of us, and it's really special. You hold down the house so often, especially when we're in hospital. You work hard so that I can be at home helping Jack thrive. You know when I need an extra break or time off. You aren't fazed by it all, and you just see Jack for who he is. You worry so deeply for him, but you comfort and cheer him up better than anyone else. You hold your hand over his needles and you lay with him until he falls asleep, because right now you are his special needs. And we are so thankful for you and all that you do. So thank you, Scott.
Thanks for those lovely words. That's beautiful.
And I guess I just wanted to say to all the special needs dads, the medical dads, the NICU dads, the disability dads, that we see you. Scott gets you. He feels you. talking to you, Dan. we think you're all amazing, yeah. And you do a wonderful job, and you are enough. What you do is enough, and you're appreciated. Yeah, so
for sure.
Yeah, so thank you everyone for listening once again. I appreciate your support more and more as the weeks go on. This podcast in itself has been a little bit of an up and down roller coaster for me and my anxiety. I guess I constantly question myself and worry when an episode doesn't get many listens or if we don't receive much feedback. But it also means that I'm super grateful to every single one of you who do take the time to jump on and listen each week. And of course, to those who also take the time to provide some feedback and encourage me to keep going. And I set my heart to something. I become super passionate about it. And please keep engaging, keep me feeling a bit more confident about myself. Give me some love. Next week we have a very exciting guest, the amazing Grecian, who you may know from Growing Our Tribe over on Instagram. She's very popular in our Premier NICU community. If you're not following her already, make sure you go and check her out before the episode drops next week. She has such a beautiful story to share with Premier twin girls Hannah and Riley, who were born prematurely at 25 weeks. So this one was probably the easiest chat I've had here so far with a guest. No offense, Scott.
No, this would have been a challenge, I reckon. So.
And her episode was also the easiest to edit, which says a lot. So Grecian is so down to earth. I've known her since the twins were born 4 years ago, so it was literally like catching up with an old friend. You guys are going to love it. She's got a lot of info into the twin life, twin pregnancy, having another baby after enduring the NICU journey with micro premies. She was very vulnerable and open. I'm really looking forward to getting this one in your ears. I hope you all have a lovely week and we'll see you next week. Bye, guys.
See ya.